This is Business by the Bay, here to discuss challenges businesses face and possible solutions. Your host, Ajay Sani.
Hello and welcome everyone to Business by the Bay. I'm Ajay Sani and today's show is sponsored by Payroll Vault, an expert payroll service provider for small businesses. Payroll Vault fully handles the payroll tasks and take over complex payroll activity from the business owners. For details, please call Payroll Vault at 925-273-7020. Today, I'm very happy to be in the studio with Brian Tublin, co-founder and CEO of Kitawa, a multi-unit clean casual restaurant nourishing people and communities through real food everyone can enjoy. Previously, Brian worked as a product manager building software products for business owners, athletes, and nutrition enthusiasts. Good afternoon. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I want to start with your journey because you were having a very stable job in the tech industry, working there, and we know how in corporate you have a, you know, fixed paycheck in the sense that there is security, stability. So leaving that and getting into the world of restaurant business, what inspired you? What was your journey? What was your thought process? Do you want to share something around that time when you started? And when did you enter this restaurant industry?
Sure, I'd be happy to address that. And some of my background, as you so eloquently put it in the intro, I used to be a product manager. And I actually started my career working for Intuit. And one of the things that drew me to a company like Intuit is that they make products for small businesses and entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I always knew I wanted to run my own business. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to gain some skills in the real world and help the small business community and entrepreneurial community by making products for them. Mm-hmm. So I worked in that capacity and then followed my passion for fitness to work for a company called Strava based in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I just kept following my interests and where I felt I could have an impact and tried to merge that with my skill set and the ability to create broader impact using technology. And that's kind of the path I was on. Mm-hmm. Around the time I was working for Strava, I ended up suffering an injury that became a broader health issue. And mm-hmm. part of my recovery process was embracing a really clean diet and learning more about food, the body, mm-hmm. sourcing, nutrition. And it had a great impact on my recovery process. When I was recovered, I was still trying to eat that way. And I realized it was really difficult to find food that fit my criteria, that had really quality sourced proteins, mm-hmm. that was based around vegetables, that was centered around real food, not a ton of refined sugars and processed ingredients. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to provide that for the community. So I decided to test it via pop-ups, via mm-hmm. farmers markets, and the passion to create something physical in the community is what drew me to creating a restaurant. And that transition happened between 2015 and 2017.
Okay.
So that's when I left my career in tech and mm-hmm. started this journey of creating Kitawa, which opened initially in 2017.
Very interesting. So initially when you were going through this, what was like really fascinating, enjoyable, and what was like kind of, you know, how do I get through this in the initial phase? How was it?
It was difficult. Early on, I didn't know anything about how to run a food business. Mm-hmm. And I spent the better part of 2 years from 2015 to 2017 learning about how to create a profitable business selling a physical good, specifically food that you're sourcing, you're cooking, you mm-hmm. have to price appropriately, you have to get, you have to figure out the margins that you need and how much you need to sell in order to cover your fixed costs and make mm-hmm. any kind of profit. So I was really doing everything. I was doing all the sourcing, I was doing all the selling, uh-huh. I was doing all the cooking and cleaning and dishwashing, all of that. And then eventually I learned as I went, eventually mm-hmm. hired a team that could help me. But those early years were really hard. I was working from sunup to sundown. Mm-hmm. At times I had the graveyard shift at kitchens I was renting. Uh-huh. And during the day I would do some consulting in tech to mm-hmm. pay my rent, and mm-hmm. I would pour all of my savings into the food business and be working in kitchens at night. And so that was really hard. It was really stressful. And there was a lot of unknown. But I think on the positive side, as long as I saw success every month moving towards the direction and the vision that I had, and I was moving in a positive direction, that is what kept me going. And so I had certain benchmarks and markers that I wanted to hit. And as long as I was moving closer to achieving that, I decided that I would keep going. And so that's what eventually happened slowly and led me to taking the leap to actually mm-hmm. open up a restaurant.
And when it comes to the healthy eating, By the way, you know that I've been to your restaurant. I really enjoyed a very nice meal with my family. It was great.
Thank you.
So, but would you like to share with the listeners the, you know, your food philosophy, the name Kitawa, and also what kind of food you're offering?
Yes. So Kitawa is all about real food everyone can enjoy. And for us, that means meals, hearty meals that are centered around veggies, healthy fats, quality source proteins, and is also accessible to any diet. So by default, we cater to a lot of special diets, including, you know, we have a lot of, most of our meals are plant-based by default. If you're low carb, keto, paleo, gluten-free, we have meals for you. In fact, our restaurant is entirely free from gluten, soy, dairy, peanuts, refined sugar, and seed oils. We don't use any of those ingredients by default. And the reason is we want to make real nourishing food that's enjoyable, accessible to as broad a community as we can, but also show that if you don't need those ingredients to create delicious food, you know, you don't need those ingredients to create delicious food. And so that's what we do, is we just use whole food ingredients that we make in-house with, you know, high-quality sourcing standards. And we try to make it accessible and approachable. And as far as our cuisine type, we describe ourselves as modern American with a local twist.
Okay.
And our menu is comprised of cuisines that you can see reflected in modern American urban areas. And so you have inspiration from the melting pot of the United States, but we use local, seasonal, and flavorful ingredients to kind of put a thread through the entire menu to make it uniquely Kitawa. You asked about the name Kitawa. It actually comes from the Kitawa study, which was done by a dermatologist who went and visited an island called Kitawa near Papua New Guinea. And he discovered that not only did they not suffer from skin disorders, which is what he was interested in learning more about, but they didn't suffer and die from chronic illnesses at nearly the rate that we do in the West. And so he realized they don't suffer from stroke, heart disease, cancers, and ended up doing some ethnographic research and published a study that concluded it was due to their real food local diet. And so our restaurant is inspired by cultures around the world that have healthier people because of the food they eat, and particularly non-processed food just made from whole ingredients.
That's amazing, because health is wealth. We always hear that, but then it's important to see our actions match in terms of, we know food is extremely important for our health, and if we believe in health as wealth, then are we taking care of our health by eating right?
So that's actually the reason why I decided to dedicate my career towards this sector and this problem, is because I believe, and we believe at Kitawa, you can only be your best self if you're healthy. And you can only give all the gifts that you have to offer to the world if you are healthy physically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically.
Absolutely.
And you can only be healthy if you're treating your body well. And the foundation of that is what you put in your body.
Yeah.
And food is that foundation. So that's truly, genuinely what I believe and what we believe as a business. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create a place where you don't have to compromise your health to go out and enjoy a great meal with anyone in your family or your friend group. If folks have restrictive diets, or they want to eat a certain way, or they care about food sourcing, you can all come to Kitawa, share a meal, not have to think about, is this going to trigger my gluten allergy? Is my mom, who is plant-based, going to be able to find something she enjoys? Everyone can enjoy a meal, have that communal experience around food, which is what food is meant for. And you're going to have that great foundation for your own personal health, so you can give all your gifts to the world.
Very true, very true. And really, this is inspiring that we are, you know, as a society, there are organizations, businesses, people, you, for example, who want to create something that can have impact not only in a specific sector, because one may think, oh, restaurant is just like, oh, there are so many restaurants, and restaurant is just about eating food, and we can just go and get food anywhere, or we eat at home also. But healthy eating is extremely hard, especially when we are eating out. And that's, you know, kudos to you, that, and I wish you all the success in,
thank you,
in this
yeah.
field.
Yeah, we're trying to make it easy. We're trying to just make the default decision easy. You know, it's one of the reasons why we're available on the delivery platforms. You can cater from us, pick up, but you can come in and enjoy a meal and hang out and read a book or have a business meeting.
Yeah. So you have two locations in Bay Area, right?
Yes, we have two brick and mortar physical locations in the Bay Area. Our first location that opened in 2017 is in the Mission, mm-hmm. inside of a former McDonald's. So we converted a fast food joint into a healthy food joint. Uh-huh. And then we opened in the Temescal neighborhood in Oakland earlier this year in January. So mm-hmm. that's our second full-fledged independently owned brick and mortar in the Bay Area.
Uh-huh.
We also have a few satellite delivery and takeout only locations in other cities, but we are looking for our third Bay Area location as well.
Awesome. So the satellite locations, how does that work?
Yeah, so we have three locations outside of the Bay Area. Two are in LA, one is in Denver, and they are operated with a partner. So
okay.
we work very closely with a partner and their delivery takeout only locations as a way to, one, spread our impact and try to have Kitava reach more people, and also see if we're successful in these locations and we might want to one day open a full-fledged brick and mortar business in these locations. So working in partnership with our partner allows us to operate in these locations and have adequate oversight into these businesses that we're operating out of. But I also go and our team will go and visit and do quality assurance from time to time. And it's just a way to see if we can spread our impact in a lightweight way before we invest more heavily into building out full restaurants in those locations.
So the food would be made in the LA area and then within a radius, it will be delivered. That's how it is?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly like the food is all prepared on site. Mm-hmm. So it's still in the same kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just from kitchens that are commissaries. So
they're
rented standalone kitchens in mm-hmm. those cities. And they just one of them actually does have a customer facing storefront that mm-hmm. you can walk up to and take a to go order. The other two are just delivery and takeout only. And they don't have a storefront that faces customers. So it's like mm-hmm. a traditional, you know, the first kitchen I rented in San Francisco when I was first getting started was a commissary commercial kitchen. Mm-hmm. And this is where I served catering clients out of. It's where I did mm-hmm. my prep for farmers markets. So mm-hmm. it's similar to that, except we serve delivery and takeout meals as well that we hand off out of those kitchens in LA and Denver.
Cool. Very nice. So Brian, you mentioned like some of the challenges working hard and no idea what you're doing kind of other than the passion you had. So besides that, as you are growing, challenges continue to grow. It's not like, okay, we are successful, so the challenges vanish. They are easier to address perhaps, but do you want to like still go, you know, walk through a little bit in terms of the some of the challenges that you faced, and especially I assume when it comes to the COVID impact, the restaurant industry was like severely hit. So do you want to talk a little bit in general some of the main challenges that you have faced since you opened?
Sure. I think recently a big challenge has been the rising cost of goods mm-hmm. with inflation and everything that we've seen happen with supply chains in a number of different industries, which ultimately typically comes back to creating and transporting food products.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if materials, cost of materials, cost of labor, cost of gas and fuel, all of that impacts the cost of our goods, fertilizer as well, like things that people don't really think about. So we've had to go into earlier this year, we embarked on an effort to try to address the rising cost of goods. We hadn't raised our menu prices in several years. So we did kind of an evaluation of our menu pricing and just mm-hmm. tried to understand what were our highest selling items and how did that translate to the way that our costs were increasing.
Mm-hmm.
So we implemented a project to do an analysis there and made a few adjustments to our menu
mm-hmm.
just to kind of try to address that. Also, we negotiated with our partners, our distributors and suppliers
mm-hmm.
to see if we can get better deals on certain items. And it's really tough. I mean, our suppliers are struggling too.
Mm-hmm.
And it truly is a partnership. I mean, if we do well, they do well. And
mm-hmm.
vice versa, right? Like we want to have a symbiotic relationship with
right.
our suppliers. And that's partly why we exist, is like we want to support good producers and high quality sourcing. So
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a tricky balance there, but that's been a big thing recently and a challenge that we've been working through and we still deal with is, mm-hmm. is rising cost of goods. Another thing is, as we've grown, you mentioned from early on where I didn't know anything and eventually you learn enough and put mm-hmm. a team around you, you get open, you succeed in one location, but then you expand and the team grows and new challenges crop up. And this is something I think any business would face when you grow is your systems start breaking.
Mm.
And what systems worked for you when you had maybe $1 million in sales don't necessarily work when you have $3 million in sales.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a constant process of trying to get more business, then you get that business, then you go back and patch your processes to try to make it more efficient. And at each step function of getting more sales, you mm-hmm. have to kind of go through a round of that. And I think now it's about implementing processes that we can scale across multiple teams, multiple locations, multiple managers,
mm-hmm.
and trying to make it so that we can copy paste the way that Kitaba is done in one location to another location, so that anytime someone experiences our food or our service or an interaction with our employees,
mm-hmm.
it's the same everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big challenge in the restaurant industry, especially as you get multi-unit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that we're continuing to work on as we grow, and we've made great strides in some areas, and in other areas we're still really working to improve there. And then another challenge I'd say is staffing is always a challenge in our industry, just mm-hmm. because, you know, the nature of the employee base, the high cost of living in the Bay Area, the fact that some employees are seasonal in the sense that a lot of our front of house employees are high school or college students,
mm-hmm.
and they might go home for the summer or they graduate or they get another job that they see as their career long term. We've really tried to focus on folks that want to be with Kitaba long term. And so that's one way we're trying to combat that. But another is focusing on retention and mm-hmm. just trying to make our processes not only efficient, as I mentioned earlier, but such that it makes the lives of everyone on the team easier. And mm-hmm. it fosters teamwork, fosters camaraderie in the way that they work with each other. So we're trying to focus on how do we make it so that we reduce turnover so that we're not always constantly trying to hire.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a third thing is just finding a great third and fourth location in the Bay Area is a challenge. And where, you know, it's something that's a high priority on my list right now is where can we serve communities that don't have great access to our food right now? And
mm-hmm.
and how can we find the best location for us that's going to allow us to represent our brand well in those communities.
Yeah, because you want to have an area where it's cost-wise you need to see, and also the market segment and the what you can expect from, you know, in terms of sales and everything. So kind of you're doing a little bit of a market study around that.
Yeah, looking at data from a bunch of different sources, we obviously also want to find a place that works with our business model
mm-hmm.
and will allow us to replicate what's worked in our everything we've learned from our first two locations. How can we take those good aspects and replicate it in an area? But I think just as importantly for us is a community that will embrace what we offer and doesn't have great access to like real healthy nourishing food in an approachable package that we feel we can differentiate from other items or cuisines that might exist in those markets. I think there are a lot of communities that fit that bill.
Mm-hmm.
The trick is finding the right rent deal,
mm-hmm.
finding the right specific location
right.
That will be accessible in that community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always a tricky thing with a brick and mortar business. You know, it's not like software where you can just, you know, pour more money into it and see the hockey stick go up.
Right.
But we're taking our time and being patient.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something that, you know, as we have success with our existing locations, we want to grow our impact and would love to find the right space in the Bay Area to expand to.
So you mentioned quite a few challenges like, you know, the cost of goods, the staffing, hiring, expansion. So in order for the listeners to get a feel for like some of the challenges that you have solved, may not be these ones or even the earlier, would you like to highlight? Because the whole idea is that to give some inspiration to listeners that, okay, hey, Brian did this and I never thought about this kind of solution. So are there certain things that you would like to share that you did?
Yeah, so I think we'll take staffing and processes because I mm-hmm. think that's something that relates to any business,
mm-hmm.
especially early on. In the beginning, I was the general manager of our first location, and I was doing a lot myself. Mm-hmm. And over time, in the beginning, it might be necessary
mm-hmm.
because you don't quite know how it's going to pencil out in terms of your P&L. You don't know how much money you're going to bring in. You
mm-hmm.
don't know how profitable you're going to be. you don't want to hire a really expensive team and not be able to afford them and go out of business in mm-hmm. 3 months, which does happen to a lot of restaurants. So, you know, I took a lot on myself, but over time, what I learned is how to effectively create roles within my team mm-hmm. and pay well for the leadership positions mm-hmm. and put people in place who truly believe in our mission, want to learn and grow and contribute to what Catawba is doing specifically, and treat them well, compensate them well, give them the support they need. My number one job now is to support my managers. So I've shifted from I need to do everything mm-hmm. to putting a team in place and clearly defining those roles and then supporting those managers. Right. So I think that that's a key shift that has happened over the last, you know, 4 years or so. And one that I need to keep embracing and continue to get better at. So that's one way is, you know, if you solve the leadership at the top, mm-hmm. it does help create a better environment for everyone else on the team, as opposed to the founder owner trying to run around and do everything and solve everyone's problem. And you don't do anything well because you're trying to do everything all at once. So that's something I would hope would resonate with other folks that are starting businesses early on.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very key point. And you mentioned, like, you know, giving well-defined roles to the leadership team. It's like delegation is at times not that easy for a small business owner who gets used to doing everything in the beginning and then let go of certain tasks in a way that you're not there and still it functions smoothly, especially when you're going in multiple locations. That's what you need.
Yeah. And I'll tie to that some processes attached to it. A couple examples are for those roles and for most roles, we've created something called a job scorecard. And it basically just defines, it's almost like a job description on steroids with mm-hmm. KPIs attached. Mm-hmm. And it, from the moment someone's hired, even before they get offered the job, I'll show them, this is the job scorecard for this position. Here's how you're going to be measured. Here mm-hmm. are the core competencies that mm-hmm. someone who succeeds in this role exhibits. Mm-hmm. And we're going to review these KPIs every 6 months. So we actually do a twice a year review process with every single person mm-hmm. who works for Catawba. Mm-hmm. But for the managers, it's extra important to review those KPIs. And they're tied to business outcomes. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that has been really helpful because it lends a objective component mm-hmm. to an evaluation and it takes the subjective emotional aspect out of it. Mm-hmm. And of course there can be, you can layer subjective performance review elements in there, but that's helped create conversations that mm-hmm. holds managers accountable and just aligns incentives so that their success is the company's success.
Great. You know, this is very valuable sort of conversation in terms of other businesses also who are kind of just going with the flow. Okay, there is a team, they are working. And then if you are not really measuring it, it becomes hard to even know the efficiency or where we can improve, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard to hold folks accountable. You know, if you have a manager that you think is doing well, but you can't really point to any objective measure, it's a difficult conversation if they come to you and say, hey, I need $20,000 more on my mm-hmm. salary or, mm-hmm. or I want to leave. Or, you know, it's just, it also doesn't give you the ammo to reward them if they're doing an outstanding job. So it's just helpful to have objective measures of results.
Yeah. So you mentioned about, like, you know, Catawba is all about, you know, nourishing food, healthy eating. So there are other places who try to promote something similar, whether they're doing it or not. By that, I mean to say that, okay, or nobody wants to say that, okay, hey, come over, like, you know, even if they're selling junk food, they won't like to say that, okay, it's kind of a junk food. They all say good food. So what do you think are really your key differentiators?
It's a good question. And I think to address what you were saying there, there has been a lot of greenwashing or health washing mm-hmm. in terms of the marketing of even concepts that are objectively not good for you.
Right.
They'll try to act like they have items that appeal to the healthier or health conscious mm-hmm. dieter. So I think we're differentiated in three main ways. Mm-hmm. One is our meals are hearty mm-hmm. and satisfying. They're not just light mm-hmm. and salads and just raw vegetables and mm-hmm. things that most people would typically associate with health. Typically, mm-hmm. most people associate, you know, I'm going to have something on the lower calorie end of the spectrum only, and it's not going to have a delicious, flavorful sauce. And mm-hmm. it might not be something that I want to have for dinner. Maybe it's just like a light snack or lunch. That's my healthy meal, and I'm going to mm-hmm. indulge more for dinner. And I'd say we have meals that are going to satisfy you. And we certainly do have salads and we certainly do have lighter options, mm-hmm. but most of our dishes are meant to be craveable and satiating. And so that's a main differentiator, I think, than most of the companies that brand themselves as a pure health concept. The second thing is, and I mentioned this a little earlier, but meals that everyone can enjoy. So whether you are plant-based only, you're vegan, you're vegetarian, whether you follow an animal protein-only diet or a low-carb diet or have restrictions, like you're gluten-free or you have to avoid peanuts and you have a severe allergy, we try to make those meals enjoyable for everybody.
Okay.
So notice I didn't say, oh, I can order something that fits this, but you should be able to order something that you like.
Right.
So that's a differentiator. And then approachable. So having something that almost anyone would recognize, at least one item or component on our menu, no matter what culture their background is or, you know, what part of the United States they're from or what they're used to eating at home, usually they'll find one thing that I recognize that, but it's done in a unique way. I'm going to give it a shot. And maybe that dish has more vegetables in it than they normally would eat. So it's kind of a Trojan horse.
Got it.
So that's what I would say are our differentiators. It's hearty, meals everyone can enjoy, and it's approachable to a wide variety of folks.
And the sauce, all those things that you make in the restaurant, you don't buy like packaged products.
No, the sauces are all made in-house from scratch.
Awesome, yeah. Awesome. Because like you buy certain things, like when I eat fries, I don't want to have ketchup because I know the amount of salt, sugar, and the preservatives it has. It's a big no for me.
Yeah, our sauces, our ketchup's actually homemade ketchup, and people say that it's some of the best ketchup they've
had. Exactly. That's why I asked you, because I really enjoyed it, and I ate because knowing that you are making everything in the restaurant, that makes a big difference.
And transparency is really important. We have all of our ingredients and nutrition facts on our website, so people can go to catawba.com and check it out before they come and look and see, you know, whether it fits their nutrition profile.
And you have a nice binder. I looked at each and every, like some of those items that I was having, like you have a complete list of ingredients over there. Pretty cool. So, Brian, we are almost towards the end of the show. So would you quickly like to share something in terms of suggestions that you have for any business person who comes to you for any advice? What would you say?
Well, the first thing I'd say is, you know, I'm figuring it out just like everybody else, but I'll give some advice, which is if you're starting, know why you're starting, know what your goals are. And I think a good way to think about this is if you imagine the business that you're envisioning being wildly successful, what would your life be when that happens? And is that actually what you want? Because that will inform how you build the business, everything from how you raise money to whether you hire a team to the type of money that you raise, where it's located, all of that. So knowing why you start is really important. And then the second thing is figure out as quickly as possible how to answer the most important assumptions about whether your idea will succeed or not. And so for me, that was doing farmers markets, doing catering, doing pop-ups, and then eventually, you know, I had enough evidence to give myself conviction to take the leap to open a restaurant. But I think no matter what business it is, if you can, in a lightweight way, just try to get that conviction, that doesn't mean low quality. That doesn't mean people think MVP, they think low quality. You know, do it well, but try to answer those key assumptions about whether or not it will work and also whether or not you will enjoy it and have the skill set to execute it. So that's what I would say.
Pretty cool. So, Brian, you want to share your website?
Sure. It's www.kitava.com, K-I-T-A-V-A, and we're at Kitava Kitchen on all the socials.
Awesome. Brian, it was truly a pleasure talking to you, and you know, you shared some very good insights, and I'm sure people who are interested about the restaurant industry or generally in the business world, they will appreciate what you shared today.
All right. Thank you so much. This was really fun.
Okay, listeners, thank you for joining us on Business by the Bay today. This show was brought to you by Payroll Vault, and we'll be back next week. Until then, take care and have a great weekend.
Business by the Bay with your host, Ajay Sani. Join us next time as we discuss challenges businesses face and possible solutions.